There's a man named Patrick Colligan. He was born 53 years ago in Buffalo, New York. He graduated from Orchard Park High School in January of 1976 and then enlisted in the U.S. Air Force. Eventually, in 1977, Patrick Colligan graduated from the Nuclear Weapons Special School at Lowry Air Force Base in Denver, Colorado. He had assignments from July 1977 to July 1980 at RAF Bentwaters Woodbridge in England, and then back to the United States at the SAC base stationed in Rome, New York, at Griffiths Air Force Base until January of 1981. And finally, after honorable discharge from the U.S. Air Force, he earned a degree in 1985 in exotic animal training and management. And Pat Colligan first worked as a professional wild animal trainer for movies and television in Los Angeles, and then he moved on to the San Diego Wild Animal Park until 1998. And then he and his wife decided that they wanted to move to less population. And on March 4th, 2002, this man with military background and working with wild animals clearly has a lot of courage. He got hired as a corrections officer for the Roswell Correctional Center. It's a New Mexico state prison. It's also known here as RCC. And it's about 20 to 25 miles south of downtown Roswell. And there's a very interesting point here. When you do history about Walker Field and the World War II environment in Roswell, you learn that they made half a dozen or so what they called auxiliary airfields. Mm-hmm. And they did them in various places away from downtown Roswell. And these were, the one I'm going to be talking about had paved runways, and there are underground tunnels under to this day under where they made these auxiliary airfields. And the one about 20 to 25 miles south of downtown Roswell is what was converted into the Roswell Correction Center. And so this prison is on the same ground, in the same place, that all these underground tunnels and all these auxiliary airports were made during World War II as backups and protections and probably hiding highly classified materials. And on October 1st, 2006, only 5 years ago, Pat Colligan was on the night shift. Around 11 p.m., a car arrived at the front gate with some Spanish parents and a son who was driving at the time. The family had come to pick up another son who was being paroled at midnight. Pat met them at the gate and asked them to park across the cattle guard outside the prison's front gate. They followed Pat's instructions, and he drove to a spot behind the prison, directly behind the prison chapel, so that he could watch the perimeter fence and the family's car at the same time. He told me, quote, "I usually like to do that and keep a car under surveillance for the first few minutes after it is parked, just to see if anything irregular occurs," close quote. And the place where Pat Colligan parked is very remote. He rolled his truck window down for some fresh air, and then he was stunned by what he saw out the window. Here now is Correctional Officer Pat Colligan.
All of a sudden, to my left out the window, something very, very, very strange appeared. There was a popping sound, like pop, 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 and kind of an electrical crackling. And these lights appeared. There was a whole row of lights, one after another.
Color?
They were white, and they were square, one in a row right after another. And they were moving from my right to my left. After the initial popping and crackling, when the appearance occurred, then everything went silent after that. And then they went into a circular pattern, where they still followed one after another, but now they were traveling in a circle coming towards me, pivoting right around in a circle. And I'm just trying to wrap my mind around what I'm looking at. And then they begin traveling back. This time it's from the left to the right, coming back toward my right, directly in front of me across my field of vision. This is maybe a few hundred yards off, the length of two or three football fields in front of me. As it passes back again, the second time in front of me from left to right, moving at a very slow, steady pace, the entire craft comes into view, and it's a giant flying saucer. It's a dull gray in color. I'm seeing the entire structure of the craft and everything. It's a solid craft, a dull gray. The lights that I saw initially are the windows. Well, this thing was a cup on top of a cup, but in the middle section, there was a big area in the middle. And in that area is where there were windows running the length of the craft. And there was actually structure between the windows. And I would guesstimate each of the windows to be about maybe the size of a trailer home. I was looking at it from the side. I counted 8 windows that were in my field of vision before it went around the curve of the ship.
How wide would each of these windows be?
Between 50 and 80 feet. It had the saucer part, you know, the dome on top, dome on the bottom. Okay, it was all dull gray. And the middle section is where the windows were. And they seemed to go right around the thing with ship structure between them.
Meaning silver metal that you could see reflecting from the light coming out of those windows?
Oh, yeah. There was craft separating each window. I'm pretty sure they went all the way around. Because when I saw the thing go into a rotation, it was lights all the way as it was rotating.
If there were 8 windows, each approximately 80 feet long, then you're describing something that is at least 650 feet wide.
It was big. It was so close, I was scared. I mean, I reached down, I had the shotgun sitting right next to me. I reached down for the shotgun, and I thought, no. I said, this is going to be of no use to me. I wanted to make myself as inconspicuous as I could be. I checked my headlights, and thank God my lights are out. It was so close, I was frightened for my own safety. Mm. I felt very, very small. And the impression that entered my mind at that point was aircraft carrier. I don't know why, but I just got that impression. And it was a very large craft, and it was on a glide path in silence. Smooth. This thing, it was so smooth and so quiet.
You had the impression of a naval aircraft carrier. Why do you think you had that impression?
I don't know. That thought just entered my mind. Aircraft carrier. Maybe it was the size. I don't know, but I just got that mental impression. Two mental impressions I got. One was I reached for the shotgun beside me, and I put my hand on the shotgun. It was like, no, no, no. This is going to be of no use to me. And then I got the impression, an aircraft carrier.
Is it possible that your sudden impression of an aircraft carrier related to the function of this gigantic craft not from Earth?
It's possible. And, of course, I have no way of knowing.
An aircraft carrier in something from outer space would mean what to you?
Oh, I would think it would be a craft that other smaller vessels would come and go from. I mean, that's what I would think of, a space aircraft carrier, sure. Just the way we launch planes from our aircraft carriers. And just after it passes by me, I can only describe it as it cloaks. It does this phase shifting or something, and it does this sort of, and it just becomes invisible. It's still moving at the same pace and the same path.
If you hear this noise that seems to sync up with it becoming invisible, how do you know, sitting in your truck in the dark, that it's still there?
Because the lights on the inside, see, there were lights, white light emanating from the inside of the craft through the windows, the lights were still on. So when it started doing this, the last thing I could still see were the lights. And then the lights went out, not in one motion, but two. It was like bink, bink. The interior lights went out. And at that point, it was completely invisible. And it did all this while it was on this little like glide slowly past me. And it was heading in the direction of, I was positioned as the crow flies. I was about 20 to 25 miles south of the town of Roswell. And it was on a glide path toward the town of Roswell and both the town and base. You can see them both on the horizon. I sat there for another 2 minutes watching just to see if anything else happened. I didn't want to miss it. And nothing else occurred. So I kept my headlights out, and I drove from that position over to the side of our master control center, and I parked in a lit area there and just sort of gathered myself together, you know, about what I'd just seen.
Did you call anybody?
No. Well, right then I grabbed a blank log sheet, and I wrote down what I could. Well, it's right fresh. I wrote down on a page. I kept that. And what I did next was I drove over to where I had had those people park. As I came up to their car, the man rolled down the window, who was behind the wheel, and his father was sitting next to him in the passenger seat. And I said, "Sir, did you notice anything unusual?" And the man had, his eyes were big like saucers. And he was staring straight at me, almost like hypnotic. And his mouth was moving, but no words were coming out. And the woman in the back seat, who was this man's wife, she leaned over the back seat, and then she said, "Oh, yes, I saw the giant saucer. It flew right through there." And she pointed to the prison chapel, and she said, "Then it crashed right into that building."
What?
And she said, "We couldn't figure out why was there no explosion? Why was there no fire? It ran right into that building." What I realized later was that they saw the craft at least from the point when it was doing the pivoting rotation and traveling back in my direction, because that was going toward the prison chapel. Now, at the point where the craft passed behind the prison chapel is the place at which the cloaking occurred. So they saw it fly in, from their perspective, fly into the chapel. It was actually flying behind the chapel, never came out the other side. And they just could not wrap their minds around what they saw. Why was there no explosion? Why was there no fire? I knew that they had seen it too. And the sighting occurred at 11:15 p.m., on October the 1st, 2006.
Did you ever call any airport authority, police, fire, or anyone?
No.
Because?
Oh, God. I mean, I didn't want attention, especially negative attention from this thing.
That is eerie, isn't it, George?
It sure is, Linda.
And especially when you raise this question, why is Roswell, New Mexico, the focus of what appears to be other intelligences from someplace else? Why do they focus on Roswell? We know that we did test the first atomic bomb at the Trinity site at White Sands Proving Ground in July of 1945, and that was a month or so, I guess, before we dropped two over Japan in August of 1945. And one military source back in 1990 told me that the UFO phenomena involves tears or holes in the electromagnetic fields of Earth, and that they can be provoked from the outside by intelligences, or there can be natural collapses in the Earth's magnetic field. And what I've often wondered, and that man and I talked about this, could the atomic test at White Sands in July of 1945 have torn open something in the electromagnetic fields of Earth that we didn't understand then, might still not fully understand now, and that this either sent out a signal or allowed the opening for, let's say, monitors, probes to come and find out what was happening on this planet that could tear open electromagnetic fields, perhaps not just in this, we'll call this three-dimensional matter world, but maybe into other dimensions, as people in the human abduction syndrome have said over and over for years, that we do not understand that atomic bombs tear open some kind of fabric in other dimensions. Well, it was, to me, one of the more fascinating parts of discussion with Army Lieutenant Colonel Philip Porso before he died back in 1998. He had released the book the day after Roswell in July of 1997 on the 50th anniversary of the crashes. And he sat and talked to me for some time about his knowledge that our government had studied 9 geographic areas around this planet where the magnetic fields were thought to naturally collapse periodically on some kind of natural, either a cycle or conditions would build up and the magnetic fields would collapse for a period, and that it would, that might make it possible for other life forms to enter here, meaning that in the period of the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, that our government was clearly focused on trying to understand how the propulsion systems worked, how these in life forms seemed to move point to point, how they used magnetic fields and the collapse of magnetic fields, and that today, in 2011, we have just heard a correctional officer down in Roswell who had an experience in 2006 that is eerie in its cloakingness, as if something is coming back on a constant monitoring path, a monitoring cycle, and cloaks itself as it moves off toward Roswell to do what, question mark. And Pat Colligan said, this is not the first sighting that he has had. He knows of other people, as if there is some kind of persistent phenomena. And since this is Christmas time and we're moving into the new year that has that number 2012 on it, I thought that I would close out this whole section on a question: if we're dealing with other intelligences, what is their nature? And is there something about the nature of this non-human intelligence that persists in very regular cycles in monitoring, interaction, intrusions, returning, and bases on this planet?